This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the BristolCon Fringe reading series. Alrighty, welcome back everybody. One or two little bits of housekeeping before we carry on. As you may have noticed, have flyers for this year's BristolCon available on the table. And if anybody wants to sign up, Joe has a box with money in it and receipts and stuff like that.
I've got a box with a sheet in it that I can write your name on.
Yeah, right.
It's up to you to put money in it.
Okay, so we very much look forward to seeing you all at BristolCon this year, and the date is October the 25th. And our guests of honour thus far, we have John Courtney Grimwood and Emma Newman. And fingers crossed we will be announcing an artist guest fairly soon. I don't think we've actually got any books on sale there, have we? No, already. So let's get on with one or two questions. And the first thing that occurred to me, actually, listening to Luke's story, was that it has a Bristol connection. Do you know what it is?
I don't know.
Alrighty, so the Petrie Room is named after Flinders Petrie, the famous archaeologist. And Petrie was funded by the Egypt Exploration Society, the patron and bankroller of which was a lady called Amelia Edwards, who lived in Bristol. And she's actually in my story in airship shaped and Bristol fashion, which is how we come to know this.
Fantastic.
So there we are. Yay, so yay Bristol. However, onto other things. Blood and Feathers, angels.
Yes.
They are angels quite unlike most of what I've seen. They are the down and dirtiest, roughest bunch of angels I've ever come across. And I wondered whether you'd actually had people objecting to this.
No, I was thoroughly prepared for people to object and to be unhappy about this, but I've had an awful lot of support from surprising quarters, really. I've had quite a few emails, I don't know if you want to say weirdly or not, but from members of strongly Christian American soldiers, which has been an experience to get those. I was expecting to get more complaints. I was very wary of the fact that I was playing in a sandbox that can mean a lot to people. I mean, you start kind of trampling all over people's beliefs with great big boots, and they would be perfectly right to get upset. But I think that most of them have enjoyed the story if they've read it.
Well, it does occur to me that strongly Christian American soldiers would take to your angels like a duck to water, because the whole idea of wandering into hell with a bunch of machine guns and heavy artillery would be right up their street.
Yes, it probably would be. The thing I always say about my angels is, on the whole, they're good, but they're not always very nice.
And they are soldiers, which you make very clear right at the beginning of the book. Now, book one I've read and very much enjoyed, and book two I hopefully will get round to soon. We need to get you on the radio, and I've got a good excuse to to read it. But it struck me that there were quite a few influences in there with regard to visions of what heaven and hell are like. I mean, you mention at the end using angel sigils from John Dee. And there were the bits of Dante in there and whatever. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
A lot of it was inspired by things like Dante. And as well as that, I had the luck, I suppose you could say, of studying Paradise Lost not once, but twice. Once for my A-levels and once when I was a student. So I was fully Miltoned up. As well as that, I am a medievalist, which lots of people know, and they had a very vivid, very visual perception of hell and what it was like. So there was definitely some of that feeding into it, and particularly with the idea of angels as soldiers. If you look at the portrayal of angels in cathedrals and in medieval art, they're in armour, they've got swords. And so a lot of it was wondering how that would work today, and so, as you quite rightly say, you end up with angels with guns.
Alrighty. Now, you say you're a medievalist. I understand that your special interests are in Anglo-Saxon literature and Arthurian romance. So, are we ever going to see stories from you set in those worlds?
It's possible. I did my master's degree on Anglo-Saxon heroic literature, so things like Beowulf, which you can probably see feeding through into things like the Angels. I was asked once whether medieval literature had any kind of influence on me, and on those books in particular, and I went, no. And then I went away and I went, I wrote a comitatus, which is the whole kind of group of elite warriors that surround the Lord and would do anything for him, and I realised that I'd done that, and I had no idea. I would love to do something spinning off from Gawain and the Green Knight, because that was another thing that I worked on a lot, and it's an absolutely fascinating poem, and it's a pure fantasy text in sort of the you know, strongest sense of the word. It's a wonderful, wonderful poem.
Okay, well, being an Arthurian junkie myself, I'm definitely looking forward to you doing something on Gawain and the Green Knight, and I'm sure that there are people who'd love to see a Beowulf-like story as well. Now, moving on to Des. Des, you have what a lot of people, I'm sure, would think of as a dream job. You work in a science fiction bookstore. How cool is that?
It's amazing. I have to say, I wake up every day and I'm very happy to go to work, and I enjoy every day, and I get to spend my time with a lot of amazing stuff and a lot of amazing people, so I'm considering myself very happy.
One of the reasons that we know you is that you folks at Forbidden Planet do arrange some wonderful launches for all of our local writers and stuff, so I should say to all of the authors out there, if you want to come and do a book event at Forbidden Planet, we like them, we will go. can they just like call up the shop, or should they get in touch with Danny?
Probably would be best to ask Danny, because she's basically in charge of this, so yeah, she's a good person to talk to about this.
Alright, and that of course is Danny Ware, who's the head of PR for Forbidden Planet, and also a successful science fiction writer in her own right. So are you looking to follow in her footsteps?
Hopefully. As soon as I can actually breathe by reading something, I should hopefully, you know, be able to follow into those footsteps. I'm working on a novel right now. Who knows? Who knows what will happen?
Well, I think we should cut you a bit of slack. I mean, you're after all doing this in a second language. How do you find that?
I think it's really interesting, especially because I now have to look up things when I'm speaking to my family in Germany, because I can't remember what they are, and the English word actually comes first rather than the German word, and it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting as well to look on sentences and to think, okay, this is what this would like in German, but actually in English I have a lot more, you know, things I can play with, because it's not as strict, which I very much enjoy. But yeah, so it's very nice to write in English, and I think I'm generally just not liking to be put, you know, have a spotlight on me, so I was rather nervous, but I can breathe now again, so hopefully next time, I didn't pass out, so I think that's the good thing. I didn't pass out, so I made it.
Joe, do we have medical insurance for these?
Yes, she's fully insured.
So has anybody got any questions for Lou or for Des?
No, I very much enjoyed your story. Could you talk a little bit more about why you chose that particular story, what inspired you about it, and whether you'd like to write anything more about that area? Because it's way beyond medieval, isn't it?
The Hobbits.
Yes.
Jurassic are a press that I have some connection with, because it's run by Jared Shuren, who runs the Pornokitch website, which is, you know, all things geeky, and who is also, I think, one of the directors of the Kitschies Awards. And I've known him for a couple of years, and he had asked me for a story in their first anthology, which was Stories of the Apocalypse. And they've done a few since, And then he sort of said, well, we're doing an Egyptian mummies one, and would you like to contribute? And so I went, yeah, definitely, I'd love to do that. And then went and decided to write something that was actually not really about mummies, but was more about celebrity and about women and male gaze, and sort of get on a bit of a soapbox. But I really enjoyed it. I've always loved museums and things like the British Museum, and although I would usually go straight to the Anglo-Saxon stuff and the medieval stuff, there's something about the Egyptian section. I went to the enormous Book of the Dead exhibition that the British Museum had a couple of years ago, and there is something absolutely magical about the way that they are laid out, and you can see a whole life just there in front of you. So I found it really, really interesting, and looking into how mummies were created, and just the ritual behind it. One of my favourite stories in the anthology is by Will Hill, who is better known as a children's writer. He writes horror, vampire horror for teens. But his story in here is called Three Memories of Death, and it is the most touching story about growing up and growing old, and all tied in with the mummification process. He sent it to me before he submitted it, and I cried reading it, and I'm quite hard to make cry. So it's a wonderful, wonderful story. It's a wonderful area to just research.
Any other questions? Ross?
I was just wondering, apart from asking you directly, Des, is there any way that we can read your writing?
Not at the moment, but as you know, I should probably work on reading it myself as well. I will get more stuff out there. This was actually the first time I ever shared anything written in English with an English-speaking person that's not my boyfriend. So yeah, there will be more. I see this as a first step.
Now, Richard, we're all very jealous of you because you've heard all this stuff and we haven't. Any more? Well, I think we are done for tonight. We will, of course, be back again in February on the 17th. We've brought you so far a Polish writer and a German writer, but in February we're going to bring you an Icelandic writer. We have the fabulous Snorri Christensen, who will come here and tell us tales of derring do, of carving people up with his big Viking sword, and well, he doesn't have horns on his helmet and all things like that. We'll also have with him our own Scott Lewis and Jonathan Pinnock, providing support, so that should be good. And if the stars are right, we might actually have copies of Airship Shaped and Bristol Fashion there as well. In the meantime, there's lots of other stuff going on. There hasn't been any PR for this at the moment because the sign-up is not on the website, but those of you who are into comics would might like to know that Mike Carey is due to appear at Toppings in Bath on February the 13th. And we had email round today saying that Karen Joy Fowler will be at Foyles in Bristol on March the 19th. So lots of fabulous stuff that we've got coming up. As I mentioned before, we have Bristol Con sign up for anybody who wants it. And it just remains to me... Oh, Ross has something to say.
I just want to say, any writers in the room, if you have any news about exciting events that you're involved with, do let us know. Website at bristolcon.org. We will put news items up and we will tweet on your behalf and generally take an interest in what you're doing.
Thank you very much, Ross. And Jo?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there's an SF and Fantasy Society meeting at the commercial rooms on Monday if anybody wants to come.
Marvellous. Well, thank you very much, everybody, and we look forward to seeing you again next month.
Bristol Con Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.